We love really rough and alone. It's just not as fun.
So this is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the arguments in part. No, we fought in a goddamn war. States' right to do what?
Thanks for tuning in to the Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7. Home of local, Peoria-grown, independent news. Today we'll fill you in on a local Medicare rally where senior citizens protested, Aaron Schock's decisive vote to end Medicare payments, and the Medicare program. We'll also take you to Bloomington Normal for the really, really free market. We'll also introduce to our listeners prison hunger strikes. Around the country, prisoners are showing solidarity for one another, regardless of the state they might find themselves in. Today, all stories have been brought to us by Michael Perillo. Stay tuned. The news is next.
Hands off Medicare!
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 This past Friday, people from organizations like Citizen Action and Illinois Alliance for Retired Americans joined a group of senior citizens down at the federal courthouse in Peoria. The event was to bring attention to two things. One was to celebrate the 46th birthday of Medicare, and the other was to present Representative Aaron Schock a cake to celebrate the birth of America's most helpful plans. For those who are unaware of Schock's position on this issue, it's abysmal. A while back, Illinois Alliance for Retired Americans showed that on 10 key votes that greatly affected seniors, Schock voted for their interests only once. The issues he voted against included health care reform, including better drug coverage under Medicare, Wall Street reform, affordable housing for seniors, and Medicaid funding. What's even more confusing is how senior citizens who vote Republican and benefit from these same plans want to see someone like Schock reelected. If they really wanted to make a difference on the deficit, they could probably raise taxes on the wealthy and reduce what they and the president do not want to reduce. That is our military spending. I don't call it defense spending since the United States has mostly been about wars of aggression overseas. So the event kicked off with Tom Bencher, a UAW Local 974 retiree and vice president of the West Central Labor Council, the West Retirees Division, speaking for the low-income families, the elderly, and those who are suffering already in this economy, and how Aaron Schock's attack on Medicare will continue to keep the boot on people's necks.
Good morning. We are here today to celebrate the 46th anniversary of one of America's most successful programs, Medicare. We also want to send a clear message to Congressman Aaron Schock that seniors in the 18th Congressional District want his hands off Medicare. Medicare is absolutely crucial in ensuring that seniors have quality, affordable health care. But Congressman Aaron Schock recently voted for Paul Ryan's budget plan that ends Medicare as we know it and leaves us at the mercy of private insurance companies. Their plan would replace traditional Medicare with a limited voucher to buy insurance from a private company. Instead of fixing the skyrocketing cost of health care, Congressman Schock wants to shift the cost to seniors. On top of that, Paul Ryan's budget plan calls for raising the age you can get on Medicare from 65 to 67. This means that working people would have to wait two more years to receive Medicare benefits. Fortunately, their budget plan was voted down in the Senate. But that does not mean the fight to protect Medicare is over. Congress and the White House are days away from making a deal to raise the debt ceiling, and there have been proposals to reduce funding for Medicare. In this economy, seniors and working families are already struggling. In order to fix the deficit, everyone should pay their fair share. It is only fair and right that wealthy individuals and large corporations help carry the debt burden by paying higher taxes. We need more revenue, not spending cuts to health care for seniors. Help me send a message to Congressman Schock, hands off Medicare.
Jenny Nayling, a local member of the UAW, explained her concerns on Aaron Schock's and Governor Paul Ryan's cuts on Medicare.
You know, if Paul Ryan and Aaron Schock's plan to privatize Medicare is a reality, it would be absolutely devastating to Peoria and the 18th Congressional District. 470,000 people that are age 54 and younger would be denied Medicare guaranteed benefits. And over 10,000 seniors that are in the Medicare donut hole would have to pay an extra $100 million in the next decade for prescription drugs. We need Medicare to protect us from outrageous private insurance companies. Now, Congressman Schock tries to claim that Paul Ryan's budget would reduce the national debt. But the reality to this proposal makes massive cuts of Medicare and Medicaid while giving even more tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans and to corporations. We need to get our priorities straight and demand that Medicare and Medicaid remain fully funded and provide seniors with quality, affordable health care.
All right. So,
at this point, Emily Stewart, an organizer for Illinois Alliance for Retired Americans, started to set out what the group could do.
Those who want to go in there, come with me.
And so the plan entailed us and the senior citizens walking together into the federal courthouse and presenting Aaron Schock with a cake for Medicare's birthday and telling him that the senior citizens would like for him to not go after their Medicare. I left my supplies behind and began to walk towards the front doors of the building with only my camera and digital recorder. We followed each other in suit and let Emily and the person with the birthday cake lead the pack. Once inside, we were at the security checkpoint where we were asked if we could speak with Aaron Schock.
You got the cake, you should be gone.
Yeah.
They'll come out here.
Everybody, they're going to send out the staff person from the office to come talk to us. They'll be out here in just a minute, they said.
It just so happens Schock was in D.C. Instead, we were going to get two representatives of his. Some of the senior citizens were surprised and kind of happy that they'd come down to see them instead of them coming up there and having to go speak with them. Although this wasn't the intention of the senior citizens, I've been with groups in the past and I've seen firsthand what one can do if let in far enough. Once they've been let in, you can easily occupy a building and make your demands more publicly known. And you can also have the person you want to speak with come and talk to you one-on-one. But instead, we waited. And while we waited, security looked at me and WCBU, which happened to also be on the scene filming and recording what was happening. They told us we couldn't take any video or audio recordings.
No pictures, no recordings, no nothing, okay?
And you're right.
No ma'am.
Oh, sorry, no, they just said no recording. I mean, I don't care.
Put the cane down here.
What, recorded audio?
Or? He said.
Doors and access open 2 feet.
Can they do audio?
No ma'am.
No audio.
So instead, I just slipped the audio device into my pocket and left it recording. Once the two representatives came down, they were presented the cake and told the group that Aaron Schock would get the cake and the message about Medicare when he returns back from his trip.
Hi
there.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm Nate.
And I'm
This is Brian. Brian, actually, I'm
Brian.
We have a letter, okay? Gathering for the birthday of our Medicare.
We'll definitely go ahead and get this out. We're right away for it. We're in DC right now. We'll get legislation stopped, so we'll get this on out there in DC right now. And then we'll go through. you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you for coming out.
Then one man in the group spoke up.
We'd like you to reconsider your vote.
All right.
Good point.
We'd like for you to reconsider your vote.
Pardon?
We'd like for you to reconsider your vote.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. I'll go ahead and get that out to the congressman's vote for you. Not a problem. Anything else you'd like for me to relay out to him?
If you don't, he's not getting our vote.
And seniors vote.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we do.
There's lots of
never
us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a great day, guys. Take care.
And then we headed back outside into the blazing Peoria heat, knowing full well that shock would probably absolutely do nothing. Later, I had the chance to speak with Jenny Nayling, who belonged to the local UAW and spoke earlier at the beginning of the event. And what is it that you're doing out here today with Citizen Action and the Alliance of Retired American?
I am here to celebrate Medicare's 46th anniversary birthday, and we needed to come down to talk to Congressman Aaron Schock, which is in Washington, D.C., but we did bring a letter from the Alliance for Retired Americans, and we also brought a cake for Medicare's birthday. And we talked about Medicare. The thing is, if Congressman Aaron Schock and Paul Ryan go through with their privatization of Medicare, it would be devastating to seniors. I am a senior, and I am on Medicare, and I'm one of those seniors that couldn't wait until when I got that red, white, and blue card, because that meant so much to me to be that person that was going to get some extra health care for procedures that I have at the doctor's office. And if I didn't have Medicare, I would have to pay the full payment, the 100% payment on my prescription drugs. There are other persons out here and other seniors that are age 54 and older that would have to wait for two extra years if they decide Paul Ryan and Congressman Aaron Schock would raise the ceiling of the age to 67. There are some persons that, they're waiting for 62, and then 65 is bad, but 67 would be really bad. And we would not have persons getting the full benefits for younger persons that also get Medicaid.
And what would you say to Aaron Schock if he was here today and actually came out to talk to us?
Well, I'd like to tell him, hands off Medicare and hands off Medicaid. We just don't want to have you thinking anything about the Paul Ryan's proposal that he has in mind. I don't have a copy of it right at my hand at the moment, but I have been told what it consists of, and it is not good for all seniors. And matter of fact, if that was passed, then there would be persons that would be paying like $100 million like in the next decade for prescription drugs that would not get the total amount of the discount that would be there that's offered to persons that would be getting Medicare and Medicaid.
I also met Nancy Long and Martha Boyle. I also met Nancy Long and Martha Boyle with the local chapter of NOW, the National Organization for Women. NOW is the largest organization of feminist activists in the United States that works to eliminate discrimination and harassment on women and take action to bring equality. They also take up a lot of other progressive issues, such as Medicare. Nancy Long spoke about the concerns of the group on Aaron Schock's views of cutting Medicare and not supporting the elderly.
We're participating in the demonstration and the celebration of the Medicaid birthday. We're representing the Peoria chapter of National Organization for Women. We're also members of the Peace Network, so we have some multifaceted concern about eliminating Medicare or even messing with Medicare and Medicaid. This is a program that people have contributed to all their lives, for women in particular, who live longer in general than men do, and who make less in their work life than men do. It would be really discriminatory to say that because they contributed less, they don't deserve decent health care in their old age.
What is now have they done in the past with Aaron Schock?
What we have a comprehensive platform now does, a concern about how much money our country spends on war versus on human services. And so, no, it's not something that Aaron has been buying into. But we do expect him to listen. He has constituents, you know, probably more women than men in his constituency here in central Illinois. And we think he should represent the people who are needing government services at this point in their lives.
Martha also gave me her thoughts on the situation.
I just think he doesn't see the implications for the more vulnerable parts of our population, the elderly, the disabled, those who are on the lower portion of the socioeconomic scale by reason of unemployment, of home being working in the home for many years, having not much time in the workforce, and therefore, nothing much to fall back on other than the Social Security and Medicare that they paid for when they.
I then spoke to Tom Bencher at one point where he explained the importance of Medicare and how it helps us now and in the future. And just for some of the younger listeners out there, could you maybe in short explain what Medicare is? Or give maybe a close idea, like why it is that you're out here defending Medicare?
Medicare is the program that is responsible for your health care. And health care costs are on the rise, and they have been for years, with no end in sight. And as a retiree, my income is limited. I no longer have a full check coming in, and to continually erode what I have coming in is just not, I don't think it's fair right now to ask the seniors in this country to accept more of the expenses and burden of those rising costs while we do have a plan in place as a safety net. And I think we should keep that. And as younger listeners out there, one day you will be faced with these same problems. It could be an exciting time for you, or it could be kind of a dismal if you don't get the right break. At some point in time, people just have to stand up and say, that's enough. That's enough. Let's just make it fair for everyone. You know, I can accept that.
I then spoke to Emily Stewart about Aaron Schock's attack against Medicare.
This month is the 46th anniversary of Medicare, and we wanted to celebrate one of America's most successful programs. It has done a great job of keeping seniors healthy and out of poverty. We also wanted to take this opportunity to send a message to Congressman Aaron Schock that we do not want him to support cuts to Medicare. He did vote in favor of the Paul Ryan budget, which privatizes Medicare and also increases the eligibility age from 65 to 67. And we disagree with that. Seniors cannot, the voucher program would force seniors to pay much more out of pocket than they already do in Medicare. And we don't think that is the solution to fixing the deficit, is to shift the cost onto seniors.
And has Schock's voting record in the past been abysmal for seniors?
I would have to go back and look at his votes, but another vote he did just take last Tuesday is on the Cap, Cut, and Balance Act, which would do a number of things, but include debilitating cuts to Medicare. So those two votes, you know, we seniors in the 18th Congressional District aren't very happy with them.
And what's the Alliance reaction to the Obama administration also going after Medicare?
Right. Well, it's hard to say because it's so much speculation. We haven't heard anything specific coming out of his mouth or on paper that said we're against, you know, we want to cut Medicare. So I think we're getting those specifics now. And regardless of what he says, we're sending the message to him. We just recently had a call-in day to the White House, you know, telling him we want to keep, you know, we don't want any cuts to those programs. But I think we just have to wait and see specifically what he's going to support.
But President Obama has shown he runs in line with the previous Bush administration on Medicare. Even before he was inaugurated, Obama said that Medicare was in danger and it was becoming a, quote, red ink as far as the eye could see. Once elected, he went out in the name of the budget deficit to cut Medicare. So liberals, Democrats, and progressives should have known or just chose to ignore. So liberals, Democrats, and progressives knowingly went along with this or just chose to ignore Obama's attack on Medicare in the beginning. It should have become more evident that this was going to happen when Obama surrounded himself with people like Larry Summers and others who devote themselves to cutting Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. And that was 2009, and now in 2011, it's without a doubt that Obama and the other Democrats are gunning for it. The White House even showed support for the Gang of Six deficit budget plan, which would cut $3.4 trillion. The problem with those cuts, though, is that they'll not be from our original deficit as of right now, but of what our deficit will be down the road. And if you think about it, $3.4 trillion is not a lot for what we're actually getting rid of. And this especially comes at a time where Americans are paying for the never-ending wars in the Middle East, and having watched the deficit ceiling raised multiple times in previous years to support those wars, and then, along with that, helping out Wall Street and doing bank bailouts, it's kind of hard to walk away thinking Obama and the Democrats are watching out for us. You see, when both parties accept that something must be done, and in this case, the entitlement programs that have helped Americans for decades, in their view, should be eliminated, it's almost impossible to stop them from acting. And when this happens, when the government does not have our consent for pushing through these austerity measures, we have to act on our own. We cannot expect our respected senior citizens to go in it alone. As Tom Bencher said, as you young listeners out there will one day, you'll face with the same problems. And at some point in time, people have to stand up and say, that's enough. So do not let the GOP or the Democrats tell you that you should expect this and that everything will work out in the end. Tell them how you feel, not how they want you to feel, because they just want us to feel numb. So get involved. Use nonviolent direct action, which is a useful tool when the government and our representatives no longer want to listen. And let your voices be heard.
This world is our home, not your property, it's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You who'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores. But because you own the money, you say that it's all yours. We laid the phone lines and the pipelines, and then right before our eyes, you see these things our taxes paid for. You now will privatize. Privatize the hospitals. Privatize the schools.
Food prices have continued to go up, and with more jobs paying low, unfair wages that have over time taken a heavy toll on the majority of Americans, it's become more evident and more difficult for people to get by. So after hearing of a nearby not-for-profit organization called Really Really Free Market, words that you won't usually hear in the same phrase, I decided to venture up to their location in Bloomington, Illinois, this past Sunday. As I pulled up to the back area of the building where they were having Really Really Free Market held at, I found Tori Moore already unloading and organizing supplies out of a large number of cardboard boxes and placing them on the fold-out tables that were placed in the back room of the market building. Since it was raining outside, they had to move everything and hope that people would still show up to share and take what they needed. Oh, so what is a really, really free market?
A really, really free market is basically a market that you can come to and you can drop things off for other people to take with them, or you can just come and take things, and there's no money involved, there's no trading, no bartering or anything. You just come and take what you want, what you think you can use, or what someone you know can use. But that's the only rule, is that you can only take it if you're going to use it.
And how did this idea get started?
Well, I guess we both sort of have a passion of, like, taking excess things and putting them out in the open for free for people to use and take. So whether it be food or whether it be extra materials, we just want to get it out there. You know, it also is a learning opportunity to show people how much stuff there is out there and how much better things can come of it, if any.
Mm-hmm. And with showing people, you know, how much stuff is out there, does it show just also the kind of wastefulness as well?
Yeah, I mean, because pretty much all of the stuff here is unwanted material. Someone put it on the curb, or they were unable to sell it at a garage sale, or the thrift store can't sell it anymore. They don't want it. So it's like, if you can't sell it, then what happens to it? It usually ends up on the curb. It ends up in someone's dumpster. I'm sort of a part of a group of dumpster divers. We call ourselves Freegans. And so we sort of do more of a dumpster diving, reclaiming things from curbsides and stuff. And we get overwhelmed by the amount of things we find, whether it be food or items. And so we really just wanted an outlet to get it out there, or to have it a place for stuff to sit. And then someone can make something of it. Just because you can be wasteful and just because you can afford to throw things away and get new stuff and whatever, like, we're trying to emphasize finding the good in small things and, you know, just creatively altering things so that they can be used again.
Having dumpster dived in the past in the Peoria area, I know personally what Tori is talking about. It's fairly disturbing how much food and still usable goods are thrown out daily just because there's a mentality of always having to go by the expiration dates, or if it's slightly in bad condition, it means it's no longer of use. As time went on, more people showed up. I ended up talking to one of the people looking for things at the really, really free market. Kelly Schneider, who was holding an armful of stuff, had heard about the really, really free market from when she was down at the Bloomington Farmers Market that's set up in the low-income areas.
Well, I think it's a great thing. It's, I think there's other things similar in the area. I mean, if I had a box of junk that I didn't want anymore, I could definitely take it to a thrift store that would go to others. But I do think this is a little bit unique in that it's absolutely free. Taking from people who don't want their stuff anymore, giving to people who are looking for new things. I just moved and I didn't bring a lot of clothes with me. I had given away a lot of my other clothes, and so now that I'm finding needs for a lot of new clothes, I get to come here and take what I can and give when I don't want other things. So I think it's a little unique idea that Tori and others in the community have really turned into a big, great thing. And I think other activities like this throughout the community would be great, because it's really nice for me to come here and meet other people in the community, whereas I'm normally really busy and I don't have an opportunity to meet a lot of people very often. And so when I do, it's great to see people from all different aspects of the community to come together. And I mean, you come here and you only see smiles, because people are either giving what they don't want and are happy they found a place to give it to, and deter their putting their things in the trash. And then you also see smiling people of just so grateful that they're getting things that they need or could want or could give to others as gifts. And I think it's just a really wonderful experience being able to give.
Really, really free market always needs your help. If you happen to own property or have open space that you can share, it would make things a lot easier for them on having a reliable storage facility. They are also in need of help loading and unloading and sorting through items. If you're more on the artistic side, they could always use anything from a whittler to musician for the creative portion of the really, really free market. Actually, there was even a jam session going on when I was there. While at the really, really free market, it was also brought to my attention that another group called Feed the Need, which had its name painted in big white letters on the front wall, was letting them use their back room for free. Feed the Need, a project started by Brad Jones and Kelby Cubston, was started to bridge the gap of East Bloomington and Normal. In front of the building, food and other non-perishable items were on sale for lower prices that you would not usually find in other convenience stores. I spoke to Brad on what Feed the Need's mission and focus was.
Feed the Need is a non-profit organization that helping with the community, the crisis and the devastation that the community faced today with lack of jobs, lack of income, lack of education. And Feed the Need is trying to cater different needs to help peoples to help other peoples.
Mm-hmm. What got you to start, like, mobilizing to do this?
Me as a small business owner, due to the economy out here today, if it's tough for me to make money and to sustain a sustainable living, my customers or my clientele or the community don't have money to come back and share, then that makes me concerned, you know, with the welfare of the people and the welfare of the community within itself. And that's where I came up with the idea to get involved and bring something new, something totally different, how other business owners operate, but to give something back, you know, as a part of my thanks, you know, to the community for allowing me to service them with my convenient retail stores. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping and looking forward to doing more than just, you know, stabilizing the community, but working with the communities and other leaders to resolve the poverty that so gets us down on so many ways and so many angles. But through resources, we looking to make this community itself, the west side of Bloomington, much better and a much sustainable community that would also be able to connect with other communities and get other communities in other towns and other cities to pretty much bring them up to date on, you know, the poverty situation and getting everybody to share in, to give a hand and to help us out.
And you have a lot of the community who donates food to this cause, and then is there a lot of volunteer work behind it as well?
Yes, it is, tremendously, you know what I mean? And we wouldn't be what we are today without, you know, the help of volunteers and the outside of the communities and other community leaders. And at the same time, you know, we studied trying to push and drive for more working capital that we can make this thing a success. And we're hoping to, in the future, get partners involved on a month-to-month basis, you know, that we can, you know, do more than just, you know, give away things, but also later on give some, maybe some housing opportunities or maybe something that we can really, you know, just really get in. I mean, really, really dig in and see and work and diligently work, you know what I'm saying, with individuals that's in a low income area. I mean, we first have to build the people in order to have a better society, and that's what we saw through the eyes of Feed the Need, you know, that we need a better society and we need to put the people back in touch with society itself and know that, you know, everything that we are facing, you know what I'm saying, it is reality.
Brad began explaining this reality, the reality that cuts through opinion and hits deep on many levels. I've come to recognize it more and more through my adult years, having listened to people struggling. And as things become less secure, and the system that most Americans depend on crumbles beneath them, revealing the threat of helplessness, it becomes even more relevant that the chances for us to survive depends if the community survives.
We at our lowest point right now, and you know, we truly are hurting. Because, I mean, you know, there's nobody out there that really even care, you know, enough to just say, hey, me and my family, we can give this month of ourselves because, I mean, we are doing so good, you know. And, I mean, there were times when it was like that. But we ask ourselves now, you know, with the things that we are facing, we are saying, you know, where's the help? Where's the hero? Where's our leaders? Where's our family? You know what I'm saying? All have gone to sleep, you know, and this is what we come up with today, you know, back to defending ourselves, defending our communities, because the state can't defend us. I mean, the state defending themselves now, you know, that's why they all tied up and then they have forgot about the little guy, you know, and that's what we're trying to get back to the basics. You know, we telling the state, you know, the United States, any surrounding communities today, we need help just as well as they want us to help. And we need them to cooperate with us as we're trying to cooperate with them. We really get involved with the neighborhood because we need the neighborhood to come back together and, I mean, really look at this thing and give it another shot out here. And regardless to, you know, how they may feel or how they may, you know, how devastated they are, I mean, it's we want to instill the hope back into the people. Yeah. Again, you know, so often that, you know, our state leaders and legislatures, you know, fail to do, you know. So Feed the Need is, you know, angered and is going towards that area, you know, trying to put the people back on the map and let the people know that, you know what I mean, hey, we got you.
Kelby was also a co-founder of Feed the Need, who began working with Brad at BJ's Variety Shop. Over the years, the customers' attitudes would change about doing things more one-on-one.
What are the people in the community starting to finally realize about Feed the Need, really, really free market, and just their situations in general?
I think people in the community are realizing that things are, I mean, on the pessimistic side, things are getting worse. I mean, they're not getting the help they've been used to. They're starting to lose fundings for all sorts of different areas that used to sustain them. However, I think they're also realizing on the optimistic side that there are people out there striving to do exactly what they need and do something that feeds their inner creativity and their inner individuality, which is something what Feed the Need is, rather than just one portion of society we're going after. We're not just going after the food aspect of society and the fact that there's food desert out here. We're not going after just the fact that there's a musician who are struggling every day just to eat, yet their power behind the instruments they play or the voice that they have is a lot stronger than anything in position where they, where if you were in a town where you were completely well fed, basically that aspect of it is something that's changing within each of these people when they start realizing that there are people out there striving for their own personal individuality to come out. And basically we offer food, music, education as a way to do that. I mean, it's a way of communication, whether it be jamming, whether it be sharing a dinner plate, or whether it be taking a class and learning and teaching together.
What's been the reaction from the community, a positive, negative?
Well, to be honest, the community has been fully supportive on all sides of the community. I mean, we have not ran into one entity or group that has not liked what we were doing. I mean, and everyone who we've talked to wants to get involved. And at the moment, we may not have a opportunity, visually an opportunity for them to say, look, go here, do this. But that's not what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. We're trying to create a place where whoever has the power to do something, they come to that place and say, I want to do this. And we want to be there to say, okay, you can do that. So there are things we need to definitely keep in place in terms of keeping the buildings and just remaining stable ourselves. And then once we have that a point, then we could be better positioned to serve anybody who wants to come in and start a new project, whether it be a educational program on World War II, whether it be a drum lesson, or whether it be somebody who wants to cook vegetables from their own garden outside of town and hand it to certain members in the community.
Finally, I asked Kelby his thoughts on what relations Bloomington and Peoria have in today's struggles.
Well, in Bloomington here, I mean, I think we're running the same parallels that things are happening in Peoria and basically all over the world, too, is the fact that people are starting to realize that once you start having synergy by getting together and focusing on select issues at hand, then you can start opening up your possibilities to addressing the other issues. And slowly those start clouding out, and slowly we start to get to a point where we're all on the same page. And being on the same page may not mean having the same name, but we're definitely working and striving towards a better world.
To find out more information and get involved with Really, Really Free Market, get in contact with Tori Moore at Bloomington/NormalFreeGans. That's FREEGANS. Or you can contact her on Facebook. And if you're interested in more about Feed the Need, check out their homepage at
feedtheneedblono.tumblr.com. That's feedtheneedblono.tumblr.com.
Well, for the last week, prisoners in several California prisons have been taking part in a hunger strike, refusing state-issued meals to show solidarity with those at the Pelican Bay State Prison in Northern California. Inmates there are protesting what they call inhumane conditions. By some estimates, more than 6,000 inmates are involved, making it the largest California prison hunger strike in more than 10 years. Clyde Young is a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party and is in our Los Angeles studio. Hey there, Clyde. I know you've been monitoring this hunger strike. What's the goal here?
Yes. I just wanted to make one correction. I am speaking out on my own behalf as a revolutionary communist and a former prisoner, not for any party at this time.
No problem at all. We appreciate your insight here. So what's going on here? What's the goal of these prisoners?
Well, I think the prisoners have issued five core demands, and we can speak to those later if you like. But a lot of them go to the core of the conditions that they're actually facing in the security housing unit at Pelican Bay. And in fact, there's tens of thousands of prisoners similarly incarcerated or isolated throughout the country. So what they're doing is calling attention to a barbaric situation that exists there. And their demands are quite just and legitimate. They're not raising demands that are outrageous or anything of that sort, but they're actually speaking to what the conditions are that they're facing in the security housing unit there at Pelican Bay.
And I know I did a story recently in which I looked at, you know, solitary confinement. I looked at the size of the cells, how many people are being put in the cells. A lot of times it's not for the most violent criminals. It's for different reasons. But what, Clyde, should, you know, regular American taxpayers know who've never set foot in a prison, what kind of conditions a lot of people have to deal with on a daily basis?
Well, I think the kind of conditions that people have to deal with on a daily basis is that, you know, I myself was incarcerated for 8 years in the 1960s, but I was never subjected to any treatment like this that's going on in Pelican Bay. What people are subjected to is being in a prison cell that's in many cases no bigger than the bathroom. And it's windowless. In many cases, it's soundproof. You can't hear, you know, a prisoner in an adjoining cell. And also, they are held under those conditions for 23 hours a day, and they're only let out every time they're let out of their cell. They're subjected to a cavity search and they're handcuffed by guards. So these are horrendous conditions. I think is nothing short of torture, and it's not consistent with international law.
I think a lot of people have even called it torture. I know this sort of came to light a little bit with Bradley Manning, the private first class accused of leaking a lot of information to the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks. He was previously in solitary, some really harsh conditions, and so it was sort of in the discussion, in the light for a little while. But do you see things changing much?
I don't see them changing in that regard. I think I'm very impressed with what these prisoners are doing, because they're doing it at great risk to their own health. They've said that they don't want to die, but they're prepared to die in order to address, to have their grievances addressed. And again, their grievances, I should just mention some of them. I think they're quite just and appropriate. One of them is to end group punishment. Where an individual prisoner breaks a rule, the prison officials punish a whole group of prisoners of the same race. Number two, abolish debriefing and modify active-inactive gang status criteria. False or or highly questionable evidence is used to accuse prisoners of being active-inactive members of prison gangs, who are then sent to the SHU, Security Housing Unit, where they're subjected to long-term isolation and torturous conditions. One of the many ways that prisoners can get out of the SHU, it says one of the only ways that prisoners can get out of the SHU is to actually debrief or inform on other people.
So you kind of have
three,
to
comply with the
you kind of have to turn the prisoners against the people that they've sort of been in solidarity with. Before you go on, Clyde, let's go back to the first one that you said. You talked about the entire race being punished when one prisoner you know, messes up or does something wrong, the entire race.
Yeah, this is not an uncommon thing in prison. what's peculiar about this is that if one person of a particular race does something that's against the rules of the prison, then they punish everybody of that race. This is highly outrageous.
That's really
interesting. But group punishment is a common thing in prisons.
Let's get back to this hunger strike itself. You said, you know, people don't want to die, but they're willing to fight for this. From what I understand, once an inmate refuses 9 meals in a row, the state requires prison medical staff to sort of closely monitor that inmate's health, possibly transfer him to an outside hospital for care. I mean, what do you see happening, Clyde, if inmates start to have to be treated for starvation?
Well, I think that I think the prison authorities will resort to whatever they can to stop this protest. That's one thing I think I have to go on record as saying. They'll do whatever they can to stop the protests, including under the guise of actually protecting the prisoners' health. I think it tells you something if people have gotten to the point where they're willing to risk put their lives on the line for demands that they're raising. And again, as I said, these demands are quite legitimate and quite just. But the prison officials so far as I understand, are not even negotiating with the prisoners. So I think they do sometimes even use the medical procedure, probably sooner than 9 days, in order to try to break up the strike.
I think it's 9 meals in a row.
Yes. Well, that might be right. I don't know the exact information.
Well, really interesting stuff, Clyde. I do appreciate you speaking to us. Certainly important that these kind of things that are happening are at least brought to light. Activist Clyde Young, thanks so much.
That's our program for today. Please tune in next week. We'll offer up even more independent local thoughts and issues here on Solidarity Journal on WAZU. Peace and solidarity, Peoria.
This world is our home, not your property, it's the commons, our right of birth. And you would enclose the land all around the earth. Our future is your downfall when we cut this ball and chain. You'd sacrifice the public good for your private gain. With our sweat we built the railroads, built cities on these shores. But because you own the money, you say that it's all yours. We laid the phone lines and the pipelines, and then right before our eyes, you see these things are taxes paid for. You now will privatize. Privatize the hospitals. Privatize the schools. Privatize the prisons. For all those who break your rules.